Last case for argument, Carmody v. Board of Trustees. Mr. Taig.
May it please the Court, Michael Taig for Kevin Carmody. Count one of our complaint is the federal due process count. We've alleged 54 paragraphs. We think all of them are necessary to tell what happened, but I think two paragraphs in particular are important. Number 20, we've alleged, in fact, there is no university policy prohibiting receipt of documents anonymously, nor using relevant documents in litigation. Paragraph 50, that Carmody did not access Dr. Thurston's computer nor any other system to obtain the documents that were delivered from the unknown source. Pre-termination, there were documents, the Thurston documents were sealed, but somehow university administrators got a copy of them. That copy was used by the dean to initiate an investigation, the gist of which is we think you stole documents to use in your lawsuit. The investigators want to talk about those documents, but there's an order still in existence sealing those documents, and they're not supposed to be talked about. Carmody doesn't talk about the documents, although the investigators want to question him about it. His attorney takes steps to have the order lifted so that the documents are no longer under seal. At that time, the university doesn't wait for the documents to be unsealed. And investigators come up with charges that you improperly access documents. They also indicate that you attempted to use those documents. That results then in the discharge letter, pre-termination, in which they cite those two instances, and they add another allegation that he failed to report a breach of security to his supervisor, which we believe he was not able to respond to that new charge that first came about in the actual discharge letter. So we go post-termination. He wants to have a full fact-finding conference. And since termination was involved, and we think the university jumped the gun in not waiting for him to be able to actually talk about the charges, a more elaborate procedure post-termination is needed. He got what we outlined in Exhibit 5 or Exhibit 9.
What do you think is the minimum post-termination procedure that he was entitled to?
He was entitled to have access to information that was available. He
like
had
discovery. I don't understand.
A candid disclosure of documents relative to where did this breach come from. He wasn't allowed to.
Did he make requests that were refused?
Yes, they requested to Mr. Kirshner in his letter requested access to the computers to actually see if in fact.
Well, I understand that's a little different.
Right,
but we've got all these letters that are attached to the
sure.
The complaint. But one of them is a response from the university council saying, in essence, make a specific request to us, and we may be able to accommodate that. And I didn't see anything in the hearing officer's final decision about indicating that there had been some sort of discovery dispute that was unresolved.
Right. And that's one of the problems. He wasn't given the right to have a verbatim transcript, nor was there a tape recording.
Well, I know that, but I'm still trying to get at Judge Posner asked you what I think all of us want to know is what do you think is the constitutional floor here, and how do we find it, and how is it based on case law? But and you talked about disclosure and discovery of some sort, and I'm trying to understand what was requested that he didn't get.
Well, witnesses didn't testify. Professor Pong, who was
the hearing officer made time available. It just was after Mr. Kirshner died, unfortunately.
Also he was out of the country when the hearing.
So does the Constitution require the university to bring I don't know, to use a subpoena to bring witnesses in from outside the country? That would be a real challenge.
Well, they have the ability, if somebody works for them, to say part of your job is to come and give relevant information as to whether a 25-year tenured employee is going to be fired or not from the university.
Okay. So what's the rule?
The rule?
The employer is required to produce any witnesses it controls?
Yes, I think that's the rule when you're dealing with this drastic remedy, and there's no articulated reason or factors that would suggest that efficiency or cost was involved. That's one of the things that...
Well, so is it a balancing test then? If you start doing kind of cost-benefit analysis that we expect district judges and magistrate judges to do in evaluating discovery responses?
Well, I think yes, because if we said, okay, we want everybody in the Department of Engineering to testify with no rhyme or reason to that, the courts could say, well, that goes beyond what would be required.
Well, ultimately, you're talking about a jury deciding this, right?
Correct.
So a jury would decide how much discovery would have been reasonable under the Constitution?
The judge or the jury would decide what needed to be done so that he had a meaningful opportunity to present his case.
We have said before in some cases like this that an arbitration proceeding is sufficient, right?
If this would be subject to binding arbitration.
Binding arbitration, yeah.
Well, you've said that, but there's also...
Is that wrong?
Well, there's cases that say a contractual remedy is not a breach of contract lawsuit, is not a substitute for a proper constitutional due process hearing.
So what's a constitutional due process hearing? What are the minimums? Kirshner had this list of 17 things, which, as near as I can tell, has no basis in case law.
There were certain things that were given within our theory that they predetermined what the result was, and our theory is they made the process look good so that it would sustain.
Why do they offer more process to other people whom they fire?
I'm not aware of that. This is not a disparate treatment.
Well, okay, but that's significant because if they use the same procedure with him that they use with their other employees, and presumably that other employees were not able to show that it was unconstitutional. What's special about this case?
I believe that the evidence is, I'm not so sure this is fully defined in the pleading because it was dismissed so early in the proceedings, but that there was no procedure in place, that Exhibit 9 was not something that anybody who is an academic...
And nobody's complained or gone... The University of Illinois must have fired people over the years.
I suspect that they have. I can't say whether anybody...
No one ever challenged this procedure in court?
To my knowledge, no one's challenged it up to this level. Have they challenged it in the district courts in unpublished opinions? I cannot say. But the...
Could say if you looked. They're not secret.
I did not come across them. Okay. So the... in essence, you have a lot of exhibits. There was time involved. We believe the argument really is that because of the magnitude of the exhibits, the time that was spent, quantity equals constitutional sufficiency. I think you have to look at quality. All the standards are what is a meaningful right to present. The biggest problem here was this... when you're balancing the test, why couldn't they have brought Dr. Pang to testify sometime during this proceeding? Why? What did it cost the employer to allow a court reporter to record the proceedings? So the district judge.
You say, why didn't they bring Dr. Pang? Is he the one who was abroad?
He was abroad, was back, and was abroad again, and apparently his attorneys who made the promises to present him were not keeping abreast of his whereabouts.
Well, after Mr. Kirshner died, was the plaintiff, is he claiming he was prevented from presenting any evidence? The hearing officer kept the record open, right?
He kept the record open. But Mr. Carmody wasn't, as a practical matter, able to secure counsel because there was no stenographic record that was prevented early on. How could a new attorney come in and properly assist him?
Let me put it this way. Is it correct that Mr. Carmody, for whatever reason, chose not to present any additional evidence?
He did not present any additional evidence. That is correct.
And did not ask for Pang to be brought back after Kirshner had died.
I do not remember him requesting it. I believe that that is accurate.
Is it customary in university disciplinary proceedings to have a stenographic record?
Well, I know in tenured professor proceedings there are, that the statute of the University of Illinois, when you're dealing with academic professionals, require a stenographic record.
How about students? Student discipline, you expel a student?
With respect to the university, I do not know the answer.
Do you think the Constitution requires that?
I believe that a record is required. Does it need to be a tape recording or a court reporter? And at whose cost is a question.
Well, what's the substitute? I don't understand.
The substitute is that if somebody's willing to pay the court reporter out of their own pocket for a formal fact-finding process.
Would that be true of student discipline as well?
If the student wants to actually have a court reporter, I would think
that. Is there any law on that?
I'm not aware of it.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Tay. Mr. Reifstadt?
May it please the court, counsel. Represent the University of Illinois and the other defendants in this case. This case, as counsel stated, is up on a...
I don't understand the why he wasn't permitted to have a court reporter to make a transcript. What's that about?
I don't have an answer for that, Your Honor, as to why that was denied. I also don't believe that there's any support that it's constitutionally required. But I don't have the practical reason.
It seems so arbitrary. If he's going to pay for it, you can see how he'd want to have a record. Not that he anticipated, I suppose, Kirshner dying, but still, you want to have a record. And he's going to thinking of breaking legal action, as he did. You'd think he'd want to have the transcript. I think the university would want to have the transcript. I don't understand on what basis they forbid the transcript to be made.
I don't have an answer for you as to the rationale. I think that in the case of a lawsuit or action afterwards, we certainly have written notes that could be determined. The witnesses could be questioned.
Reliable. Why not have rules about, do they have any rules about disciplinary standards, procedures?
I believe that they set out those standards by way of letter to Mr. Carmody ahead of time, along with
the. Did they say no transcript? That's one of their standards, or what?
I don't believe that I don't believe that the transcript was contemplated one way or the other in those standards. In this case, the complaints by the plaintiff are many. There are two basic complaints that the pre-termination hearing was inadequate. We submit that the district court was correct in its dismissal of the case. All that was required when there's an adequate post-termination remedy is in this case.
Wait, what did you just say? All that was required was an adequate post-deprivation?
No, I didn't finish my sentence.
Sorry. Okay.
in this case, all that was required with the pre-termination hearing when an adequate post-termination processes in place is that he be provided with the notice of the charges against him and that some kind of hearing prior to the termination be held.
Right. Well, this is a pretty unusual situation, right, because we've got this court order from the judge. Are the orders, by the way, in the record?
An actual certified order, I don't believe is.
Uncertified, anything.
There may be a letter.
There's a letter that quotes one of them that says, I don't want these, if I recall correctly, these documents stay in these lawyers' litigation files, and that's it.
They're not to be disseminated.
And not, presumably, to university administration.
They're not to be disseminated, is my understanding of the
order. Right. Beyond those lawyers' litigation files. That was the phrase that sticks in my mind anyway. So the plaintiff is basically gagged about any questions that university people want to ask him about these emails. He can't really respond. I'm really troubled by the timing. This September 23rd, we've got university counsel appearing with Carmody's counsel in front of the state court judge, who then lifts the order. Same day, university says, we're not waiting any longer, you're fired. Does that, in terms of just kind of common sense fairness, is that, I don't know, we'll figure out about due process, but in terms of fairness, what was the rush?
I think that they have an interest in the security that they have.
Of course they do. And he's suspended with pay for, and has been at that point for 2 months. But they can't wait one more day to let him answer their questions?
But he was provided an opportunity with the pre-termination
hearing. And he would have been subject to contempt of court if he'd answered those questions.
Correct.
And that's not the university's situation that you created. I understand
Correct.
That. And the university at least held itself out as willing to work with his counsel to provide that opportunity. And then when you've got it, same day, he's fired. What do we make of that?
I don't know what to make of it, Your Honor. I know that he was given an opportunity that comported with, in our opinion, and with the district court's opinion, that comported with the constitutional requirements, that he was given notice of what he was being charged with. There was no new charge.
And an opportunity to respond, right?
Correct.
Now, you're telling us in your briefs that the university people didn't really want to talk to him at that hearing about the content of the emails, right?
I don't know that is entirely, I suppose, accurate.
We've got conflicting. At best, we've got conflict.
There was a letter, correct, from the university said he was also going to be asked about the contents thereof. Mm-hmm. I believe that's correct. But that was not the charge. Wasn't only what's in them. It was the fact that he had them, period, that
sure.
was in the prior notice.
I get that. Okay, I understand your concerns there, but I'm. You ultimately wound up firing him just for not reporting to his supervisor. And suppose somebody in the university's IT staff comes across emails that show evidence of a crime. Are they required to go to their supervisors before they go to the police?
I don't know that there's a timing requirement that they would have to go to supervisor with the police. I don't know. I suppose my answer to that is, Your Honor, is that would ultimately be reported to their supervisors at some point in a reasonable time frame. I can't define reasonable.
We don't know what that policy actually, how that a policy would apply under those circumstances.
I don't.
Uh-huh. What evidence is there that the plaintiff knew there had been a breach of computer security? Your expert, apparently, we don't have a record, and maybe I'm getting into the merits of this thing, but your expert took some time to examine all those documents and try to figure out where they came from, and he concluded there had been a breach. Do we know? Is there any indication that the plaintiff had the same opportunity, had reached the same conclusion?
That he had access to find that information?
That he would have understood that he could have gotten those emails only if somebody had breached security.
Well, I think that the original notice that he was the questions how he became in possession of documents where he wasn't the sender, the recipient, or
and his answer was somebody gave these to me anonymously. How does he know that's a breach of security?
Well, I guess that the common sense answer is that I'm in possession of documents that aren't mine. They weren't to me.
How does he
they
know
weren't from me.
How does he know Thurston? Well, he's got them. But how does he know Thurston didn't have a fit of conscience and slip them to him?
He doesn't. So
that wouldn't have been a breach of security.
So go to his supervisor and say, look what I have. I don't know why I have these or how I got these, but I have documents that don't pertain to me at all. And I think that in this case what we have is he has notice in the original notice sent to him that possession of these documents could be a breach, and if found to be a breach, he could be terminated. He, in fact, was terminated, and then we went to the post-termination hearing that he participated to up until a point when with the untimely passing of his attorney. With respect to this witness availability of Professor Pang, the documents that were provided as part of the complaint here show that even after that, there was a continuance granted. I think we see a example in the notes of the hearing officer that I don't have a specific grant of authority to give you more time to hire an attorney, but out of reason, that's what they did. With respect to trying to find Pang, I think the documents that were attached to the complaint showed the conversations and the emails that took place between counsel and university and the hearing officer trying to make Pang available. And then at some point, apparently in frustration, I don't know, Mr. Carmody says, that's it, I give up, I'm not participating anymore, at which point there was no interest for the university to call him as a witness. It was going to be Mr. Carmody's witness. So at that point, I don't think that the characterization that the university failed to make Pang available or should have compelled him to be available makes any sense here, because the efforts in doing that were ongoing. We would ask that this court affirm the district court's order in all respects.
Thank you very much, Mr. Reifstack. Mr. Tagg, anything further?
I didn't
reserve
any time.
That's okay.
But what we believe this case shows is that every time Mr. Carmody was confronted with an accusation, he responded to it, but the ball was moved. Initially, you have documents, you stole them and you're guilty. Mr. Reifstack indicates that, well, in the original charge, it said that there was improper access, so he should have known at that point in time maybe it was a breach. Well, that's not what he was fired for. He was fired for not immediately reporting having the documents. Once, of course, the university had them, once they made the accusations against him, once the process of pre-termination started, at that point in time, everyone in the university and presumably the supervisor would have known about him having possession of the documents.
Does this all arise from the peanut business?
It might.
He's upset about the peanuts?
Correct. And this was the first opportunity that they had to retaliate.
Why does he care about the peanuts? I don't understand.
Well, there was a use of university resources for private gain. And he did report that to his supervisor.
He wouldn't do anything about it? Was that what riled him?
And under our theory.
What upset him? They wouldn't do anything.
Right, and they held a grudge.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel, and the court will be in.